All right, and we'll start our interview section of the podcast now. We are joined here with Amy Broadmore. Amy, thank you for joining us.
Hey, happy to be here.
I think we're both really happy to do a in-person interview.
Yeah, no doubt.
After several virtual interviews, it's just not the same.
Yeah, it's nice to see people.
See people, and it just, yeah, communication works better face-to-face, and then, of course, the sound quality, too, hopefully will be a lot better for everybody that's listening to our podcast right now.
Even though we're outside.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some strange ambient noise, but...
Outside on the deck, so if you hear some cars go by or a chainsaw, literally there's a guy chainsawing over there, that's what's going on. Well, Amy, again, thanks for joining us, and let's start with kind of our traditional start place with a lot of these interviews. Tell us how you got started in running, you know, when that was, what got you started, all that kind of thing.
I started running when I was about 12 or 13, and I started running with my dad, who ran all the time. I ran middle school track, I ran high school cross country, and then I ran in college.
At Grinnell,
Carleton. First, I went to Carleton.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yep. And then transferred to Grinnell.
And the coach at Grinnell, what's his name? He's a pretty famous coach, actually.
Well, my coach was Evelyn Freeman.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And her husband, Will Freeman.
Okay.
Coaches the men's team.
Yeah.
Where are you from originally?
That's funny. Grinnell, Iowa.
Okay.
So, yeah, I came. My parents taught at Grinnell. It was free for me to go to Grinnell and finish up there.
Oh, nice.
Yep. I got to shout out my coaches at Carleton were amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Donna and Dave Ricks, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was one of the big thing I, yeah.
That's awesome.
They were really great.
Was your dad, like, a marathoner, or what?
He would run, like, 5Ks. He wasn't a runner growing up. His dad, I mean, he played a little basketball. He did, he was a good volleyball player. But he got into running. His dad got him into running, I think. There was, like, in the 70s, people were getting into running.
The boom.
And he had never been coached, so he'd go out super hard. He'd get really tired. He hated racing.
Oh.
And he never told me. He never told me how much he hated racing until I was in college and I'd already fallen in love with it.
Oh, funny.
So I was like, that was like the nicest gift he gave to me, was to not tell. So he raced for like, he was good.
Yeah.
He had a little talent, similar to mine, you know, not. And, raced for like 5 years because he thought he had to, and then he quit, and then he just ran for the rest of the time. So
he got into it kind of competitively.
He thought, yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily like just being fit for volleyball and other athletic pursuits. It was competition aspect.
Yeah. I think a lot of people runners get into running and think they have to try to get as fast as they can.
Right.
And don't think, well, there are other approaches I could take.
I think that's the intro to so many runners is, team runners maybe is the races, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they want to finish a 5K and they want to finish a 10K. And
yeah.
Back then, marathons were considered kind of crazy. So if you didn't do that.
Yeah,
they still are in my mind.
Yeah, right.
So your dad was, when he was racing a little bit, was he doing that with the idea of kind of keeping you motivated and sort of inspiring you a little bit or setting an example?
Oh, no. My parents were not pushy parents, you know. He just liked running. And he had a group of, like, 5 friends in Grinnell, Iowa that ran.
Gotcha.
So he'd get together and run with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I started running, I would run with them, like, every day. And I was just, like, well, in the summers, I would run with them every day leading up to the season, you know.
Yeah.
And you, like, liked it right away? It's not like you're like, come on, Amy, let's go.
No, I really enjoyed it. And we just go, like, 2 miles. He didn't push me. I enjoyed his company. I liked having my own personality traits, and being a runner was kind of part of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I knew that in high school I wanted to be a cross-country runner while the rest of my friends were volleyball players, you know, but that was my identity, was partly a runner.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
What sort of distances or events did you specialize in track?
In college, I definitely was focused on the 10K, 10,000. I liked cross-country better. That was, I mean, the team and just a little more laid back feeling to the sport.
Yeah.
But then, I got into the 10,000 and,
So you were like a distance runner from the start?
I was distance from the start. I was disappointed that we only got to go 2 miles, you know, in track. And,
That's exactly how I felt in high school. In fact, I didn't go out we didn't have a cross country team in my high school, and I didn't go out for track because 2 miles was the longest they ran. And I just kind of thought, why bother? Because I had, when I was a kid, like ABC Wide World of Sports, and they would show the New York Marathon and the Boston Marathon on TV, and Bill Rogers and Alberto Salazar and those guys, and I thought, that is so cool.
Yeah.
Just as a kid, that's so cool that they run that far. Mm-hmm. But then by the time I got old enough to join like track and stuff, I was like, wait, they only go 2 miles? They don't go like 10?
Yeah.
Why? And so I just didn't bother. Yeah.
Jack showed up day one of cross-country practice, my oldest son. And that was the day he learned that he would never get to run further than a 5K in cross country for his whole cross country career from 7th to 12th grade. And he came home so disappointed.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I was like, I never thought to tell you that.
That's it must be a gene thing of, I guess you said your dad wasn't big on the long distances.
Yeah, he didn't run distance, but Jack grew up with me, you know, and he went out. He used to run 8 mile runs. That was the standard run.
Yeah.
He's dialed it back a bit, but.
So was that kind of part of your identity through college of like, I'm a runner and the, like a focal point of your.
Oh yeah. I mean, I made all my best friends running, went to small liberal arts colleges. So you definitely didn't you weren't as serious and focused on running as if I'd gone to a D1 school.
Right.
You know, I loved my classes and other things as well, but
yeah.
Running was the best part of college for me, for sure, and all my friends.
And how did you transition out of team running from college, and did you take a break? I know a lot of team runners kind of like, just putting that aside and or whatever.
Yeah, I definitely, no, I was not sick of running when I left college, and still loved it. I love it to this day. So after college, we moved to New Orleans, and I married Andrew. Wrong order there, but I was with Andrew.
Yeah.
And he got me into triathlon.
Okay.
I trained for my first marathons in college, actually. Hmm. Quit track the last couple years and trained for marathons instead.
Yeah.
So I ran my third marathon and qualified for Boston right after college. Mm-hmm. And got into triathlon. So, yeah.
Cool. And how long were you in New Orleans?
2 years.
2 years. And how was the running down there?
Non-existent.
Ah, interesting.
Andrew and I would place second at every race.
Oh, wow.
There was another couple that would place first, and then would place second.
Wow.
And that was just like you'd show up for a race, and that's what you know would happen. Yeah, we'd run, like, there weren't places to run. We'd run down the trolley tracks.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah. St. Charles Line.
Yeah. It was funny, all the people that came to New Orleans for the New Orleans, the marathon there, that was the third marathon I ran.
Uh-huh.
And, like, people were looking up, like, what are they doing? You know, all the locals were like, what? You know, it's billed as this Mardi Gras marathon, really exciting. And you get there and you just, like, there are no crowds.
Oh,
there's
weird.
No one paying attention.
Funny.
The aid stations were, they had cookies. They had, like, a church made cookies for this aid station and cookies. And I got to the end, and I was so low on blood sugar because there was not actual food at the aid stations.
Oh, yeah.
This was also 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm sure the quality of this marathon has improved.
Yeah, it's still going on.
Yes. Yes. It's one of the rock and roll marathons.
Oh, okay.
It's part of that series.
Yeah.
When I got to the finish, and this nurse was like, I am so sorry. I think I have a few lifesavers in my pocket.
Wow.
Wow.
So, the New Orleans running scene was really
interesting.
Just didn't exist.
Did you and Andrew know this other couple? Did you, like, train together? Or was it, like, animosity?
We got to know them. Oh. No, they were really nice. We got to know them. They were a military couple. They were super serious.
Yeah.
But we got to know them just because we were runners, you know?
Funny.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
My wife and I were in New Orleans last October.
Yeah.
And when we were down there, the Jazz Half was going on, Jazz Half Marathon. So we got into that race, and we went and did that. Completely different scene than what you just described, like you said, 20 years ago versus now.
Right.
Tons and tons of people, bands all over the place.
Yeah.
And then the post-race food, I mean, jambalaya, etouffee, it was incredible. It was the best post-race food I've ever had. You know?
Lifesavers?
I don't remember any lifesavers, but I went for the good stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
Sure.
Yeah.
I love, absolutely love New Orleans.
Yeah.
We were scheduled to go there for spring break this year to go back for the first time since we lived there.
Wow.
I loved it. Loved living there.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Also, there was one race that was super well attended. Every year the hospital system would put on a 10K, mm-hmm. and people would come out of the woodwork and participate in that who just didn't look like runners. Yeah. So that was the exception. That was really cool.
Yeah, this one was kind of a fundraiser for a children's hospital mm-hmm. down there. So it, mm-hmm. it very well could be something similar, some similar people. I think they had a 10K mm-hmm. as well. I think they had a half and a 10K.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was mm-hmm. fun.
What brought you to Duluth?
Andrew took his first job. My husband Andrew's a doctor.
Yeah.
Took his first job in Grinnell, Iowa, as a family doctor, and I had a job down there that I was having to commute an hour for, and so we decided that I wasn't going to keep commuting an hour. Like, something had to change about our lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I looked towards Midwest towns that had some outdoorsiness to them,
mm-hmm.
and came to Duluth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
When was that?
It was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
2009.
So you're already in kind of the triathlon culture, you know, or at least like the desire to do that, or mm-hmm. whether it be running, triathlon, other endurance sports.
Yeah.
You get to Duluth. What was your first kind of reaction to the community?
I mean, we love Duluth from the get-go. It's so welcoming.
Yeah.
Like, the easiest place I've lived to make friends. Yeah, it was actually, triathlon was a brief phase for me. I did lots of marathons. I've probably done 20 road marathons at least.
Mm-hmm.
But the first ever race I did here in Duluth was before I moved here. We did the Brewhouse Triathlon in maybe 2007.
Yeah.
When we were living in Iowa.
Okay.
And my first reaction to the community then was that it was incredibly competitive.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
I'd lived in New Orleans. I'd lived in Iowa. And then I moved to Duluth, and we came up here to Duluth. I was like, what? I can barely see those people out there swimming, you know?
Yeah.
I thought I had some butt in triathlon. I was like, nothing. Couldn't keep up. You know?
So you went from Grinnell, Iowa to New Orleans, back to Grinnell.
Yeah.
Then, funny.
We lived in the Twin Cities.
Okay.
I mean, I've lived lots of places.
Yeah.
But, yeah, 10 here in Duluth. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
the most consistency I've had in a long time.
Yeah.
And we love it. We're not going to... not leaving.
Yeah.
There are some pretty, I think especially in the, you know, mid-2000s to 2010s, some really competitive triathletes kind of in the peak of their game in Duluth.
Yeah.
I mean, Brian Bish and Rhett Bonner and
and
the Brewhouse itself, I know, you know, attracted a lot of talent. I think that's when it was part of a series, Minnesota series, which I mm-hmm. don't think exists anymore, and I know that was
we
really
we didn't look into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just wanted to visit Duluth.
Was that on your radar of, like, places to relocate? Like, let's check
not
this
at the
place
time.
Out. Okay.
Not at the time, but we just liked, like wanted to see Lake Superior, I think.
Oh, yeah.
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 So when you moved to Duluth, were you still doing triathlons or were you doing road marathons? I mean, you must have known about Grandma's Marathon before moving as well, right?
Not really.
Really?
It really wasn't on my radar. No, I would do the Twin Cities Marathon. I love that.
Yeah.
Still, I think, my favorite road marathon. But when I moved to Duluth, I had my third child, and he had a health condition that was pretty serious, and so I wasn't running, and I took about 2 years off after he was born. So I had three kids, and those I definitely took time off after that. It slowed me down quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, so I did marathons before them, had my three kids, and I was right in the middle of that when I moved to Duluth.
Okay.
So kind of got back into running about a year and a half after I moved back up here to Duluth.
Yeah.
So.
And what was your focus at that time where you're like, I'm getting...
Marathons. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Marathons and road.
Yeah.
So I trained for Grandma's. I wanted to qualify for Boston because I hadn't done that for a while. So I drove to, like, South Dakota and did, I think, Sioux Falls Marathon. Did Marquette Marathon. Did Twin Cities again, I believe. Yeah. So I was road running. Doing marathons.
TC is the favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Why's that?
Perfect time of year.
Yeah.
Great crowds. I mean, just the fall leaves and the temperatures and the lakes and the course is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I don't mind a few hills. I think that makes it interesting. So
almost makes it better sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been like, I've never chosen a course because I'll get a PR because it's 26 miles. I don't want to be running for 26 miles just to get a PR.
Right.
I don't know.
Cool.
So tell us about your running now, kind of lately, like you're in the last, you know, for 2020 and halfway through 2019, that kind of thing, the last 12 months.
Yeah, so I got into trail running about 2013.
Okay.
And 2013, 2017, was really enjoying trail running. And then 2017 is when I sprained my ankle on a run in Hartley, which seems so simple.
A lot of rocks and roots in there, though.
Yeah. I twisted my ankles a gazillion times with no big issue, you know? But I went down, and that led to a whole series of injuries. So I have really been struggling for, like, I mean, I did Chippewa 2017, spring. That was awesome. And then started getting in good shape and just got injured. So it was from then, about a year and a half, that I didn't really get back to running until about 6 months ago, consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Although some people will call me out and note that I did do Trans Rockies in the middle of that, which is a six-day stage race. I did somehow do a couple Eugene Kernows that were half walking, half running. I did do Last Runner Standing, and somehow my body came back to life.
I interviewed you for that, if you remember, right after you finished, which might be a blur, but we're like, there's Amy, I gotta talk to her. And you're like, you had a big smile on your face, like, oh, I'm so jacked up, I did 50 miles.
I'm like, what happened, body? Why did you come through for me today?
Yeah,
and I just stopped myself then because I didn't want to get hurt. You know, I was like, I could have kept running.
Yeah.
Andrew looked over at me. He's like, maybe you're the Broadmoor who should keep running today because you look in better shape. But I didn't want to get injured again. So.
Right.
Called it.
So one sprained ankle and just this cascade of injuries.
Yeah.
And can you go deeper? I mean, it's mostly your feet, ankle, plantar.
Hip. Other hip. I mean, it's hard to unpack or even look back at, but, one thing that I learned is that you can tear your plantar fascia. I didn't know that plantar fascia existed, like on the bottom of your foot. So I was getting like tight calf, and at the end of a long run one day, this was on the other foot from where I sprained my ankle. I just stepped and I tore the bottom of my foot. So that was one, like something about my gait, you know, getting messed up from the sprained ankle coming back.
Compensating or something.
Yeah, somehow got me so tight that I actually tore my plantar fascia. And no doctor, Andrew, I feel like something is torn in my foot, you know? And he's like, you wouldn't do that unless you jumped off a building, Amy. You didn't tear the bottom of your foot. So no doctor thought. It took them a little while to diagnose that.
Wow. Yeah. Huh.
And I was just limping around. And they thought I had plantar fasciitis, but I just ruptured it.
Torn.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, I mean, in trying to get back to running, everything got weak. My hips got weak. And so I caused injuries there. I had IT band issues. I've never had any real injuries in my life.
That was going to be a question. I mean, years of marathon running and then one sprained ankle, boom. I mean, no injuries, just hunky-dory for years.
Yeah, I came back from my kids really nice and slowly.
Right.
Never got injured. You know, I think some women, their hips and everything gets wonky from childbirth.
Right.
And they maybe try to push it too hard and don't get strong before they come back. And I did some Pilates, and I think I just was patient and come back so fast and had no troubles. But still, that childbirth makes your hips weaker. So trying to, you know, so when I took this time off because my foot and ankle injuries, I needed to be more aggressive about strengthening my hips than I was. Now I know that.
And so. I guess that's my next question is, do you think there's a, you said the last 6 months you've been able to ramp back up and feel good.
Yeah.
What's the strategy there, or what's been working, hasn't worked in the past, and what is working now?
Yeah, I've really, really, really had to listen to my body in figuring out what was wrong, because it just wasn't a simple fix. I was having issues in like multiple parts of my body,
right?
And no doctor was knowledgeable enough about what my body was feeling like to give me the right advice. It just wasn't a simple fix. And even, like, what I really appreciated was the doctors that admitted that. Said, you know what? We're going to try some things. This isn't going to be something I solve in one visit.
Yeah.
You know, so we're going to try a few things and we'll get to it. But in the end, it was me getting to it and figuring out that I was kind of injuring myself biking.
Mm.
I needed to feel like when I was trying to do uphill repeats, which a lot of people do uphill repeats, it's low impact. But that's the worst thing to be doing for my feet.
Right.
So I shouldn't be doing uphill repeats. Yeah. And then biking, which a million people say that's great, right? But it was causing so much foot pain to stick my feet in. They need in those tiny bike shoes.
Right.
You know, and then it was causing hip pain because I think I have a labral tear back from when I was little.
Okay.
Is that what it's called? Labrum?
Labrum, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like go way down in an arrow position when I'm biking, even if I'm in their attic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Andrew was trying to get me to sit more upright, and I was just like, I was like right back down there.
Yeah.
And I was putting too much strain on my hip.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, biking's normally great for people who are injured, but I had to listen to my body and be like, oh, that's not great for you.
Yeah.
So right now, even, I'm like, for so many people, it's wonderful. Like, but I'm trying, just even with my plantar fasciitis, to be limit myself to 2 bike rides a week.
Okay.
Because I don't want to get in that little cycle again.
So when you talk about like listening to your body, are is it just kind of an intuition thing? You're just kind of really paying attention and doing what feels right or not doing what feels right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not just intuition. I mean, your body's giving you all these clues.
Yeah.
So you just, there's no simple answer.
That's what I was going to try to get to, is how does a person read those signals?
Yeah. I started to notice that I was getting better on vacations. Which I thought was partly just me being more relaxed and happier. I was like, there could be a placebo effect going on here, for sure.
Right,
sure.
But then, after a few times of these vacations getting me better, I realized it was vacations. I was giving up biking. I was just running. And I was living in my Birkenstocks.
Yeah, right.
And I was walking. Yeah. I was actually walking and using my body more.
Trying to find the common denominators there.
So I ended up healing more from not resting quite so much.
Hmm.
Getting out on my feet, using my body a little more, and not biking. So,
I think walking is good training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like hiking in the Canyonlands.
Yeah.
I was like, is this good? Is this good? Is this good? And I'm feeling better.
Yeah.
You know, and the time I 6 months ago, I was on a trip in Arizona, and I was doing these walk runs, and by the end, the Trans Rockies healed me too. I did a 6-day stage race, 120 miles.
Yeah.
I started that race walking.
Yeah, yeah.
I went out there.
You
kind of
have to, right? I mean, 6 days.
No, you don't.
Oh, really?
I was the very back of the race. I was like, I paid for this. We're going to have I was doing it as a team with Andrew. I never would have done it by myself.
Yeah.
But it was our vacation.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, okay, let's go out and we'll walk it. And Andrew's like, really? We're going to walk it? And I was like, yes, we're going to have fun. This is not going to be about competition. This is going to be fun, Andrew. Have you heard of fun? You know, like, so I had him back there, and he was like, okay, we're having fun.
His competitive juices are just clicking.
He's so competitive. Yeah. So the first 2 days we walked, and we took photos, and I started to feel better. And day 3, I was like, Andrew, I think I can run part of this.
Yeah.
And then,
cool.
By the end, I was good.
It's interesting you say that, because I have problems with some of my tendons in my ankles, both my left and right foot, kind of all the time. They're always sore, especially the Achilles on both sides, but even just other tendons down there. I've personally found, too, that more running helps, and running twice a day helps. I don't have to go far or very fast or hard, but if I keep it moving, and like you said, walks are really good. And I recently read a study from a university in Australia somewhere, and they kind of talked about that tendons want to move and they need to move, and that's good for them. So once they're healed up after an initial injury and they can support the load, then frequency is a good thing, and that's what you want.
Yeah.
That's kind of been my experience as well as yours.
Yeah. I think it's body specific for sure, but
absolutely.
Yeah. But noticing that can help.
Yeah.
For some people.
Yep.
This reminds me of two other people that we've interviewed. One, Malcolm McCauley, who's a PT.
Yeah.
And he said that, you know, to heal foot issues, fast walking, that's what he kind of prescribed for me. He said you should try like walking really fast, as fast as you can, and walking uphill. And so I think that's like the low impact, just different use.
I like hike up Spirit Mountain.
Yeah.
I don't do hill repeats running, but I really like hiking up Spirit Mountain and then jogging down.
Yeah, yeah. And Jason Buffington, who's I don't know his exact.
He's a family doctor. Practice, I think.
Yeah, family doctor.
Yep.
And he said, you know, for those tendon issues in the feet, jump rope.
Yeah.
And so, kind of just these different.
That's intense.
These different. Yeah, I know it's kind of intense, but you know, it's a little counterintuitive. Where if you'll say like rest, ice, elevation, and certain things, and that's just listening to your body, you know, and working
and that's
a
any injury.
Bit.
Initially, I would rest. I take days off immediately the minute I find
right.
it. You know, that's my initial feeling.
Yep.
which maybe it's good, but
2 to 3 days. 2 to 3 days, absolutely rest.
How many times do you get, especially like I've dealt with some plantar fasciitis too, it's like I'm just gonna deal with this. I'm taking a month off and I won't run for a month, and then I run the next day. And after a month, it's like, I can't even feel this anymore. I can't even remember which foot it's in. Run the next day, boom, there it is again, you know? So I think it is kind of working, but it's so dependent, body specific. I completely agree. But they have kind of the, some of these things in your toolbox. Like, I'm going to get onto this speed walking uphill plan or jump rope plan or something.
You know? And you get more tools in your toolbox.
Absolutely. And Amy, you wrote a really good article, and for those, for the listeners who haven't read that article, it's on trailsisters.net. And if you just search, they have a, like an injury in their topics section. They have like an injury and rehabilitation part, and you can find Amy's essay in that. And that essay, we've referenced it, in fact, on this podcast before when it came out January 14th. I have it up right now. Came out January 14th. That was really good. I really, really liked that. It's a lot of kind of what you just mentioned about kind of using intuition and how you went through different stages. You talk to chiropractic people, you talk to PTs, you talk to massage people, you know, everybody, and, you know, you kind of got different answers, and ultimately you found out what worked for you. So, yeah, if you, if, for our listeners, if you haven't read that article, I definitely encourage you to do that on trailsisters.net.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning it. Yeah. I wrote it mostly for myself, honestly, just to remind myself. In the future,
what? And there's, I think, there's some pretty good like knitting advice in there too, right?
I think. Yeah, I took up knitting. That was my way. I mean, I was like really in a bad place mentally during that injury too. So that walks you through that, you know, and it shares that if you're feeling grumpy, about an injury, or I've definitely had depression before, and I was feeling. I was feeling that fog, like I would I could delve back into depression. So injuries can really be a. They can be tough.
Yeah, absolutely. More than just the physical thing that specifically happened to you, but this, the whole loss of lifestyle is really hard. And trying to find something to replace it sometimes doesn't quite do it, and so that makes it even more challenging. So,
I hate to even bring it up as a topic of this conversation, but I guess it's a running podcast. We pretty much touch on injuries and injury prevention with every other.
Yes. You know, subject. Part of it eventually.
Yeah, running really is part of it. You're going to get injured at some point. It's just kind of how it goes. Well, let's move on. I know recently you have been doing a lot of race photography and just photography in general, but definitely race photography. I think you maybe, I'm guessing you got started in that maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
First, well, no, the first time I started was 2017 when I got injured.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Freed up time for photography.
Yep.
I mean, I've done photography since high school. But started. I was a yearbook photography editor in high school. Got back into photography when my kids were young, but then I started taking pictures for John Storkamp's races in 2017, and I was like, oh, you know, when I was injured and couldn't do the races myself. And then recently, I mean, I did it just voluntarily and just for fun, but I recently am starting a photography business, sports photography business.
Oh, cool.
And not geared towards race photographies, but geared towards taking photos for brands and businesses that do running, biking, need running, biking, and outdoor shots.
Cool.
So like running brands.
Yeah, cool.
Duluth businesses that are outdoorsy, that kind of thing.
Like local podcasts.
No, sure. I'm just
kidding. Will, when you're taking those pictures, will you be kind of focused in on Duluth scenes for the most part? Or are you going to look and be looking at traveling for these as well?
I would do some of both. I mean, mostly Midwest and like a company, if they're willing to pay me enough, I would travel. You know? Yeah. So there's, I mean, like races like Western states, more and more companies will pay a photographer to take photos at Western states. But, that's, I don't see that being the main part of my photography. I also got paid to go to, well, except for the coronavirus. So it's on, it's this fall now. Hopefully. But getting paid by a race to help take photos of female endurance athletes to promote to encourage more women to come to their race. So and I have another race who's contacted me about that paying me for that. So what started out as a, you know, non-paying gig, I'd be willing to do, you know, some of those. But mostly I have a family and I want it to be Duluth based.
Right.
It's tough if you're getting gigs all over the country and you have to travel every week.
It's tough. I mean, it would be tough. That's not the business model that would work for me.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not going to be an Ian Corliss.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking more for companies that want to sell their running shoes, send me some running shoes, have me set up a photo shoot, and take photos that way.
Yeah. I guess I don't really know what you've done professionally in the past. I mean, were you always kind of the entrepreneur?
No, not at all.
Person, or?
I mean, what haven't I done is actually the question.
So you are the entrepreneur.
No, I've never. I've worked at nonprofits. I have thought about starting a nonprofit. Uh-huh. I've applied to work for nonprofits. But what I've probably I was an environmental attorney in Iowa, and then I moved to Duluth, gave up that job, and I knew that was not going to be my job here in Duluth. And then I was got a degree in library science and was a librarian in our school district.
Mm. Cool.
So, and then it looked like those opportunities weren't going to happen for me here in Duluth, and I wanted to stay in Duluth.
Yeah.
So that led me to start this photography business.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then let's kind of, on that subject, let's talk a little bit about your, I guess, relatively recent project, the Onward Project. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So when I started my Onward, or my photography business, I wanted a project that really motivated me and made me really excited about taking photographs. And the project that I started was called Onward, and it's aimed at exploring reasons for women's underrepresentation in endurance sports. And so not just running, but also biking and skiing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I got the impetus for starting it when I got into gravel racing when I was injured.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed up at a gravel race and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm one of six women. And I'm not particularly comfortable here.
Yeah.
If I had showed up at a running race, I mean, my first running race was, I was obviously not, I was like, oh, there aren't as many women at these either. You know, the long distance in 2012, I was at the Moose Mountain Marathon. There weren't a ton of women.
Right.
But I'm very comfortable running. That was not an issue, you know.
Right.
I was like, all right, I'm going to be like, show them that I'm a woman out here doing this.
Yeah.
But at the biking race, I was like, oh gosh, a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of intimidating, I think. Like, ready, set, go.
Intimidating.
Yeah.
And also, I was like, and why the heck not? I was so shocked
that
there were so few women gravel racing. I wasn't even aware that that was such a thing.
Yeah.
And I mention that race all the time. The race director's awesome. He wants more women in that race, so no, you know, but there need to be more. There are other races that are less welcoming, I think, and so I wanted to explore, well, what are the reasons? Why aren't there this many women? And I was like, also curious, what about long-distance skiing? What about long-distance running? Like, what really are the numbers there?
Right.
And looked into it and was surprised. I mean, running, there are about 25% of the participants in 100-milers are women.
Right.
That seemed about right. About 30% in 50-milers are women. So I knew we were underrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
At Voyager, 50 every year, that has not that many women in it.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I brought my... I'm just... To me, they're just people, you know, and I hadn't really paid much attention. But I was like, wait, they brought my really good friend and her daughters to the race. And their daughters were like, so is this the men's race? You know, we're watching the beginning. They go over the bridge at Jay Cook Park. We're about 2 miles in. Is this the men's race? Is there going to be a women's race? And I was like, this is the race, girls.
Right.
And good question. Like, why aren't there more women out here?
Right.
This has been so central to what's brought me joy in life. Why aren't there more women? So the Onward Photography Project tries to explore different reasons that there possibly aren't more women in long-distance endurance sports. And to share that through storytelling, like asking women questions, and through photography and images that will depict that.
That's super cool.
What have you found so far? What are the reasons?
Yeah, so I mean, brainstorming, I'm like, motherhood, that set me back 10 years.
Yeah.
A lot of women power through motherhood a lot quicker than I did, but you still have to take time off for that.
Right.
Also the time commitment. Are women... not just childbirth, but motherhood going forward, you know, and how gender roles in the society have women taking care of kids more than men.
Right.
And that's being even amplified more during the coronavirus.
Yeah.
So there are more and more women taking care of the kids, stepping back from their jobs, and those
being a teacher
differences are just getting, you know, more amplified.
Hmm.
So gear, I noticed women tend to do gear-heavy sports less than men.
Yeah.
So, like, mountain biking, they're doing less than running. Skiing, they're doing less than running. So is gear an issue? Is that part of it? That was my question, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm at this point, I'm trying to ask questions.
That's interesting.
Look, you know, being in the information gathering mode of this project, you know? I don't want to... Yeah, but that was definitely... And then what about learning new skills and taking risks? Is that part of the equation?
Sure.
Because you see fewer women skate skiing than classic skiing.
Yeah.
So why do more men venture into the skate skiing realm where you have to learn a new skill?
Mm-hmm.
More men venture into mountain biking where you have to learn a new skill than gravel biking.
Right.
You know, so I think that's all stuff that maybe women are more hesitant to do.
Right.
Also looking into race culture, is it... Some races, are they welcoming to women? Some aren't.
Absolutely.
You know? And I think there's some races that just not having many women makes them less welcoming. But also race directors will do things, subtle things that they don't realize, I think, that are making certain races less welcoming to women.
Yeah.
So. And then we've got Hard Rock race lotteries that can help more women get in, or they can hurt women. Uh-huh. You know? So Hard Rock's race lottery definitely keeps women out because it favors... people who've done it in the past, and those tend to be more heavily men.
Yeah,
sure.
So definitely want to look into that more generally, not just focus on Hard Rock specifically, but race lotteries generally. And some bike races are taking more of a proactive approach to get more women in to their races.
Yeah.
By letting, like, not leaving, like, leaving caps open for women. So the race is capped to... you know, has a certain overall cap, but the women can, you can,
gotcha.
There's no cap on the women.
Yeah.
Which, that's what a lot of bike races are doing at the moment.
That's a good idea.
Which is great. It still doesn't make the field get huge.
Right. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I see this really up and close, being race director for the North Shore Inline Marathon, because we have the inline skating race, roller skiing race, and the running race.
Yeah.
And the running race is, you know, it's a road 10K and half marathon, so definitely not 100 miler, different crowd, different reasons to do the race perhaps, but that's about 75% women, 25% men, whereas the inline skating is maybe 60-40 men, more men than women, and then the roller ski is like 75% or 80% men.
Yeah.
And so again, running less gear, you need gear. Another
and
thing
consistent.
Which is another thing that's interesting too, though, is that in the inline skating race, which is by far the biggest race, you know, with 1,500 people, and so it's easier to kind of pick out these data points where the roller ski, I mean, there's 70 people, it's a little bit harder. There's not as much data to really look at, you know, statistically significant or whatever. I'm not a data scientist. But anyways, so the inline skating race, there's... more of like a 50-50 split in the recreation waves, so like the slower waves, and then it's like 90% men in the elite waves, so elite men and elite women, and so the just even within the inline skating race, elite versus recreation, total split.
Yeah,
it's really, really kind of interesting to look at the data.
That just raises a lot of questions, doesn't it?
Of why?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's what I wanted to. I'm like, I could survey women, I could survey people, but I kind of want to dig into it a little more deeper and ask open-ended questions and get stories, and then kind of over time. But I also am a data person, so there may be some data follow-up or
absolutely.
Some, like, I'm going to look at Arrowhead data and, because that's like they're doing the exact same course, just like your inline marathon example.
Right.
You know, and so compare them, men and women doing the different disciplines.
Yeah.
Time cutoffs that are really stringent, those can disproportionately impact women too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So you have to have time cutoffs. You can't have aid stations out there all day.
Different time cutoffs, maybe, you know.
But think if it's a race, like, why did I establish this time cutoff? Is it because there's an actual safety concern, or could I extend it?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like Western states, there was the year that the weather turned really terrible, and they had to decide whether to extend the time cutoff or not,
right
on the spot.
They'd
extended it one other year, but that year, just a few years ago, they didn't,
right?
And it cut out all the 70s and above, which was so sad. There wasn't a reason. They could have definitely extended the time cutoff on those first aid stations.
Just it nicely was still asking daylight. The volunteers,
it was still daylight. It was still, like, everyone loves Western states, they're excited to, I assume, volunteer.
Yeah,
you know, there's still a limit to your excitement.
Like, one more hour, now I'm out.
Yeah, but
like,
probably not. Yeah, I don't know. So just think about it. Why are those in place? If you have to be that stringent, you know, get it, but...
Right, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Think about it. So I'd love to do some dig into the data there to see see if that's a big impact on women versus men or not.
Right. Yeah, so there's a lot of factors.
You're looking to ask, why is there not more female participation in these races? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you think, Amy, that there's a different reason why men or women race in general. You know, like, is it because of the competition? Like, I want to beat people.
Yeah.
It's for my ego.
Yeah.
You know, are more men more like that?
Right.
And women are more like, it's an accomplishment? Or do you think there's a difference just...
I'm sure there are differences. I'm sure there are. There's, I mean, there's, like, part of the exam... Well, one thing that there's differences in, speaking in general terms, is that women often value community and team in an event.
Uh-huh.
So that makes them even more... I mean, that's why in cross-country skiing... Like, leaders in that sport, Keegan Randall and Jesse Diggins, make such a point of trying to establish teams of girls and showing up-and-coming girls how fun it is to be part of a team. Like, because that's one of three things that has really been proven to keep girls in sports is this sense of team and community. So I think in long-distance races, too, you, like, need to have some sense that there's, like, a team of women there that will attract some women. Some women don't matter.
Yeah.
But some women, they need that sense that this is, like... Trans Gran Canaria this year, I heard they made just a big point of welcoming the women. They let the women line up first on the starting line. And the women who raced that just said, it was so powerful, and we felt like we were really in it together.
Yeah.
You know, and to a lot of women, that would make it a lot more positive experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure there are other things you mentioned that would be different.
I just wonder about that, if that's an underlying issue.
Yeah, because some races stress... But this is super tough and you have to get through it.
Yeah.
Is that more appealing to men? Is that more appealing to male men or women? And should that be out there, generally speaking? Like, I do love tough races. I love a tough challenge. And does that mean they shouldn't do it? I mean, there should be races out there that cater to that.
Or I think, like, we could find the answer to that question by looking at a non-equipment heavy race, but that has that sort of macho feel, like the obstacle course races, you know, like is there a more macho race out there than like the Spartan race, like you'll get electrocuted, you know, it's just so macho, but you don't need any gear, so maybe that looks at that factor.
They've changed the marketing of those races somewhat over time too to be a little less that way.
Absolutely.
And I don't recall or know if I know the whole reasoning behind that.
In your research and just with this project too, do you think that more men like own this equipment than women? Like, is it just women don't have this gear because they don't like having gear? They're not gear people.
How much are they willing to spend on themselves? I don't.
That too.
I think there's.
Or they're just not doing the races that require the gear. Is
what's that?
or like, is it that they just don't have the gear, like gravel bikes or skis, or they just don't do the races that require the gear for whatever reason?
I mean, I think a lot of people who get into these races are willing to, some are willing to purchase it to do the race. And I do think at least a lot of moms and just women in general, maybe they're less likely to purchase. I don't know. I want to look into it. I think those are all good questions. That's the stage I'm at and really what I'm interested in. I got into triathlon because I had Andrew by my side helping me through every step. You know, and I know I showed up at Arrowhead and I saw a lot of women like that. You know, so there were the women that really impressed me. Not, they all impressed me. Arrowhead is no easy race.
You're not impressed by those finishers. I mean, anyone.
Yeah, but I was like, that was one thing I was digging into it with Arrowhead, because that requires a lot of gear. It requires saying, hey, it's worth it. I'm worth spending all this money on for this crazy adventure in the woods. Gear I'm never going to use again. I mean, you can make it as less expensive as possible, but you're still having to buy quite a bit of gear.
Not
to mention just traveling up there, you know. Just the whole experience, I think, costs a lot of money. Sign-up fees, whatever.
For sure. So... I haven't gotten that stuff out and onward, but that will be coming soon. Really delved into gear and how women got into the sport and whether that was a barrier or not, whether it was exciting for them. But just anecdotally, I show up to races and I feel like they need, also women do need a way to learn how to do, I mean, I'm focused on long distance races. Mm-hmm. So long distance mountain biking, long distance gravel, you need to be able to repair your bike yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Long distance skate skiing, it's nice to be able to wax your own skis.
Right,
you don't have to.
Right.
And so women need to learn that information somehow.
Yeah.
And then how do they learn that information? The bike shops are often run by men.
Right.
So that it can be another barrier as well if you don't have someone in your life that can teach you that information.
Yeah, that's true.
That you feel comfortable going to for help.
I don't know if men realize that so much that there can be an intimidation factor in a lot of those times when if you're the teacher or the you say the bike mechanic or someone who's giving the information, that you can kind of be intimidating a lot of times to women. And I don't think men necessarily mean to, but it's important for them to understand, important for us to understand that can still happen. And somehow we have to learn to diffuse that as much as we can.
It very much can.
Yeah.
And I've had great experiences in Duluth. Mm-hmm. And not great experiences.
Yeah.
Just right here in Duluth.
Right.
And men don't mean to.
Right.
Act like, talk down to you.
No.
Or,
no, but,
you know,
but it happens. It
yeah.
happens. I've seen it happen too, going, you know, bike shopping and stuff with my wife.
Yeah.
Too, so.
Yeah.
That's why I think that's such a cool project, because, like, mm-hmm. you know, being a man myself, mm-hmm. I haven't really noticed a lot. Like, there's not a lot of women at the start line, you know?
Yeah.
And especially, I'm, like, you know, focused right at the start front, so the start line, rearing to go, you know? But
mm-hmm.
it's interesting to just acknowledge this and, like, here's the data and mm-hmm. here's the stories. I think the story is the better way to paint a picture anyways. And for instance, like Tony and I just doing this podcast, I think how many interviews do we do? And then a listener says, like, you haven't interviewed any women. What gives? Like,
we didn't even realize.
We didn't even realize.
Yes. A lot of it.
Yeah.
And
that was,
oh.
I bet we were almost into the teens.
Yeah.
Before we finally had our first female guest on. And we're like, guess we hadn't.
I'm realizing a lot more as I get older, too. Yeah, I felt super happy to come onto your podcast because I think of you as great with women. So that was a positive. There's some podcasts out there I would be like, know that are a lot better known than yours, but I'd be like, oh, okay, maybe I'll come on.
Yeah, right.
Right, for sure. Yeah, that's just the thing as men, just growing up, just throughout our lives, it hasn't ever been on our radar. So it's good to get on our radar so that we can be aware of it. And as we continue to evolve, we can just improve on that aspect of ourselves.
I think as a woman too, like I am now more aware of women who might not be comfortable in a running environment where I was 100% comfortable just because I'd done it for so long.
Right.
You know, now that I've tried out biking.
Yes.
And skiing and doing the Berkey, and I was kind of like, oh, what the heck am I doing out here?
Yeah.
You know, now I'll be more thoughtful when I go to the running race and there's a woman lining up for the first time.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's kind of your goal for Onward, or what do you hope to expose, or what do you hope to instill in people, or
what's your
I mean, obviously I think the main goal is this is something that you're passionate about and you like doing.
Sure, but my goal is that through these stories that more people would see the perspective of women and start, and ultimately, so it's definitely we can start thinking about how to increase the number of women at races. I mean, it's very straightforward and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the Midwest, right? Like, I can start here in our community. I think Jeremy Kershaw's gravel races, they can have more women in them.
Yeah,
you know, and he wants that, so how can we get that to happen? And I think just through storytelling and making things more comfortable for women, we can do that. And like Hard Rock, I would like to take them on a little bit.
Yeah.
Not really, but you know, I mean, I love Hard Rock, I want to run Hard Rock, but but like, and there are races around here that I just want to raise issues.
That's
and I think there's so many people like you who, well, gosh, we just didn't think about it that way.
Yeah,
you know. And so I'd like to raise issues and then share stories in a way that it people can relate to, understand, and see the woman's perspective.
Yeah.
It's not just data. It's not just, you know. And so my ultimate, like, physical product with this is to have a book in a few years. Mm-hmm. And then I really like the idea of a book because it's really concrete and that just seems more like a good goal. But then also a exhibition that could be associated with some of these races.
Mm-hmm.
So that you go to a John Storkamp's race and there's, like, an exhibit of of the photographs and little snippets of stories that people can walk around and take that in as they're, and then the next day they head to John Storkamp's race.
That doesn't jack you up for a race. I don't know what would.
Yeah, it's super cool.
That's true. It's motivating. Yeah, like, it's motivating, and it makes the race feel welcoming to women and makes other people think.
Like at, and pre-race meetings, you could do that, and the race itself.
Yes.
For instance, like John's 100 miler, you've got both of those options, and at Arrowhead, you've got both of those options. Certainly the pre-race meeting, you would have that option for sure. So yeah, that's a great, that's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a gravel race called, it just changed its name, Mid-South. It's also, it has like very much a community gathering feeling. It's right near the beginning of the year.
Okay.
So that's another race that would be great to have.
Cool.
It's a whole, it's not just a race, it's a get together, you know? And so it'd be great to find a great place to put up an exhibition there. So they've expressed interest, even though they thought it was already in exhibition form, ready to go. If it's not, three years from now.
Yeah.
Right.
That would be.
That's cool.
You know, places like that. Hard Rock, Western States, you know, Western States for sure. That has that feeling.
Sure.
Yeah.
That storytelling element, I think, is so powerful. Because, I mean, if anyone out there is, like, you know, nervous or, you know, looking at something that they think is so far-fetched, you know, what gives you that confidence more than seeing someone do that who you can kind of see yourself in? Like, that person's like me, you know, hey, that person can do it, I can do it, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. And so I think to hear these stories and to make that relation or connection, you know, that person can do it, I can do it.
Yeah. Short term, I do have like Instagram feed, Facebook feed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think you have women who are runners who follow the feed and then get to hear stories about a bike race. I'm like, oh, I've had lots of people coming up to me like, oh, that mountain bike race you went to sounds kind of fun. Never thought about mountain biking, but maybe. And I can definitely see that with Arrowhead.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't think I would ever do Arrowhead. And then I went up there and followed it, you know, and I was like, ooh, I can see the appeal.
Yeah, totally.
Do you have a specific story that sticks out to you as like a really awesome story? I mean, I'm sure they're all pretty excellent, but.
I hate this question because it's like, I don't have a good answer. That's why I hate the question.
Yeah.
I love following Alex Elizabeth's FKT on the Superior Hiking Trail. You guys know about that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the whole, it was just an epic, it was an epic story, but not really. Yeah.
Talk about gear.
Talk about gear.
For Alex's.
Oh, the most stressful gear I thought was the tracker.
Oh, sure.
Like, oh my gosh, she had to keep, like, she'd go off. Do you have the tracker on? You know?
Yeah,
like,
right.
In this day and age, you need to have that well documented.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else seems straightforward, but I was like, I don't know about the tracking part.
Oh, gosh.
I need to have that stress when I'm.
You're right.
She had no sleep.
Oh, gosh.
You know, four or 5 days in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, well, one that got a. One that a lot of women related to was a woman talking about how she gets compliments out on. When she mountain bikes, she's a when she's mountain biking and she does something that men don't expect of her, they give her compliments.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, and I don't hear them doing it to other men.
Yeah.
You know? And so she's like, just mixed feelings there. Like, if it's a clean compliment, if they're not talking down to me, I can appreciate the compliment.
Yeah.
But it also makes me stop to think and be like, did you not expect me to be able to do that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So it feels a little. Mm.
Why are you so surprised?
Yes. Why are you so surprised?
Yeah.
And it, a lot. I mean, a lot of women had their own stories when I posted that. They were all like, "Oh my goodness," you know, and less than positive comments, like calling someone sweetie or you know, like the guy meant to be nice, but don't call me sweetie. Yeah. I'm out here riding a 100-mile, really technical mountain bike race, and even if I was running a 5K, you don't call me sweetie.
Yeah. Right.
For men, so, like, that's an easy fix. That should be a pretty easy fix in terms of trying to, like, progress and become a little more advanced and respectful people. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty easy fix.
It is a pretty easy fix. And it doesn't mean you have to be just, I don't, like, over-police
men. Right,
like, it's not like you can't say nice things.
Right.
There's some people who just talk and would talk and compliment people constantly the whole race.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And that's their personality.
Right.
You know, but just think for a second if you're doing it to women and you're not doing it to the men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Very interesting.
I did, just watching that race, there's this really crazy technical downhill. This is just random, but it just sticks out in my brain.
Yeah.
That not in a million years would I ever consider riding down. Ever. But there was a big gender difference in the risk that men were willing to take down that and women.
Sure.
If a woman got on her bike, I was like, she's going to do it. She is not wiping out. This woman knows what she's doing.
Uh-huh.
And if she didn't know, she would walk the bike.
Yeah.
And if the men got on the bike, you didn't know what was going to happen. They are wiping out right and left. And like, you know, it's like, what is it that a woman, and when a woman also, when they got on that to ride it, I was like, please represent women and make it. And I was like, what? I shouldn't put the pressure on that woman. She should be allowed to wipe out just like the men are doing. Those women who are walking their bike, they should be willing to just give it a try and not think I'm a woman and I have to...
I
would feel the pressure if I was in that race.
Mm-hmm.
There were only 10 women and 137 men.
Wow. Yeah.
So if there was a woman, you noticed it was a woman.
Right.
It wasn't hidden. So just those little things that are like a little, make you a little more self-conscious during the race that men don't think about. You know, that the woman next to them is feeling a little extra pressure, a little more like...
Sure.
For me in a gravel race, I feel that pressure because I have such terrible skills that... You even notice my lack of skills in a gravel race.
Right.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, that was totally me. I was like, please don't look like an inexperienced woman.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just an inexperienced biker. Like, that's what I am.
Just
an inexperienced biker. I should be allowed to be cruddy at this.
Yeah. Exactly. Cool.
Oh,
yeah. Do you have other questions about Onward? Tony, the Onward project?
I don't think so, but I'm excited to follow it and see where it goes. I think it's a super cool idea. I think it's a super cool project. You know, as a guy, my wife competes in some of these endurance stuff, and I've got two stepdaughters who I hope will continue to be active physically with different events. I think it's just a great thing to encourage more of it and to kind of build that confidence and then also just to teach us guys about some things that maybe we didn't know that we need to know. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you.
My only question I got, I guess, from here is what's next for you? I mean, race-wise or with Onward, and I mean, especially with the global pandemic, races kind of being canceled, and I know we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, is projects that you had in mind.
I have projects in mind. So, I think Onward is just... Like, I was going to go to Hard Rock this year. I was going to go to Dirty Kansas this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
That would have been fun. I had, like, races on the calendar. I feel like Onward's kind of postponed a year.
Yeah.
For going to new races. Mm-hmm. And I might look a little bit more close to home at some opportunities to, you know, look into gear maintenance here in Duluth. Mm. Some more local riders. We've got some neat stories that are closer to home that I might try to just touch on.
All right.
In the meantime. And then I have Arrowhead that I just haven't, like, races I took photos of they got. So, and then with my own running, I am looking, well, I'm sort of training for Marquette and Superior in case they happen. I'm registered for those two races. And the idea is to just train for those, and if those don't happen, to do an adventure run, which seems possibly more likely.
What distances are you signed up for?
Yeah, I was signed up for the Marquette 50K and the Superior 50 Mile.
Cool.
Been wanting to do the Superior 50 Mile for a while. Oh. And I love Marquette. So someday I'll get back to those races. But if not, I wanted to run, well, my thought was the Superior Hiking Trail through Duluth, which is about 40-some miles.
Yeah.
But there's a chunk of it that's not that, generally it's really awesome.
Uh-huh.
Like, people who do the Superior Hiking Trail and decide to not do Duluth, I'm like, I don't understand why, because there's a lot of beauty that is the Superior Hiking Trail through Duluth.
Absolutely.
But there's a short segment that's not as beautiful on the Lake Walk.
Yep.
You know? And that, and then your project with planning all these crazy adventures got me thinking, well, maybe I could make it slightly more beautiful than the Superior Hiking Trail through Duluth. You know? Because we have that new Cogs Trail.
Yeah.
Maybe I could involve a gravel bike in this expedition.
Yeah.
You know, so, yes. So it'd be sort of in something in the 40 to 50 mile range. Well, no, I'm not running 50 miles. Maybe I'll be in shape. It's hard to imagine now.
Yeah, right.
Something in that range, single day effort.
Cool.
Yeah. But I just want to have an adventure. Not an FKT, no interest in trying to go fast on my own.
Yeah,
cool. But, yeah.
The gravel bike trail run duathlon concept is very enjoyable. In my personal opinion.
Yes,
so.
But that's definitely not thought through, because I don't know how you'd gravel bike through Duluth in a fun way, a way that's fun. If I was technically good at mountain biking, right, that would be awesome. Superior Hiking Trail, COGS, right?
Skyline's
pretty
cool.
That's an obvious one. Skyline.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. I mean, you know, it's half
I'm pretty
gravel.
Timid
of... Or half
right,
pavement, half
gravel.
Yeah.
I like pavement as long as there aren't too many cars, though. That's the
Skyline can be hit and miss,
yep.
But
yep.
It's
can
a
do
fun
it in the middle of the night.
It's a fun kind of combination of, like, you can crank out to Spirit and then bomb down the hill, and then it's gravel, and that's really cool too, because you can take even more off the beaten path down by Old Skyline. Was it Mission Creek Trail?
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun. That's part of Voyager, and that bumps out to the park down there.
On my gravel bike.
Yeah. Chambers Grove.
Yeah.
In theory, I could do that.
In theory,
you could totally do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's fun to do pavement and then gravel and then two track.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, then you're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something to think about.
Yeah. I'll have to look into your... Yeah.
The possibilities really, truly are endless, especially here in Duluth with so many different surfaces to run or ride on and just places to go and see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I could talk to Jeremy and head up north, too. I've thought of that.
Yeah.
Like doing some sort of gravel road.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did a loop two weekends ago, and it was on Fox Farm Road.
Yeah.
And I biked on Rossini Road and Drummond Grade, which were two really cool, flat, nice gravel roads. And then, so it was about a 30-mile ride, locked up my bike, and ran 16 miles back on the Superior Hiking Trail right back to my car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was an excellent loop. Although, just...
Were there mosquitoes?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but I didn't stop for very long, so...
Okay.
I outran them. Enough, and that was I think two or three weekends ago now, so I was maybe a little before the mosquito.
The one thing, and the mosquitoes will be an issue later on, and then later in the summer too, July and August, the deer flies will be really bad out there.
Yeah,
but it's
think Fox Farm Road, I think bugs.
Yeah, big time.
Not a bad location,
bugs,
but
big time out there. But it's fun. It's beautiful out there. Drummond Grade is great. Rossini's great. Yeah,
that was a cool loop, anyways.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And the SHT winds its way through that whole section, and there's so much gravel out there. And, you know, it's funny because it's pretty close to Duluth, but it's such a pain in the butt to get to, like, those trailheads, Rossini Road, and the Demonstration Forest is just, like, take a left, then a right, then a left, then a right, and then you're finally up there. And it's fun to park closer to town, like Normanna Road, and then you can kind of bike out to, because the bike to some of those trailheads is so fun.
Yeah.
And then run back and... It's just like a little bit of the duathlon.
It'd be fun
type
to plan, fun to
effort.
Look into.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
What else, Tony? Any other questions that you have for Amy, or Amy, any other thoughts that you have, or?
Not really.
Yeah.
No.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Wait.
Yeah, go.
One last thing.
Yeah.
Like, how do people find Onward?
Oh, yes. Onward, it now has a website.
Cool.
The website part is new. It's at Onward, WMN for women, onwardwomen.com. And then it's also on Instagram at Onward Women. It's not full women. It's Onward WMN and Facebook, Onward WMN.
Cool.
Yep. And then I'm also on Twitter. No one follows me there, but I am.
Yeah. And if people want to hire you for photography, how would they find you for that?
Yes, Amy. I'm the only Amy Broadmoor in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. Amy Broadmoor. No, it's broadmoorphoto.com. Everything Broadmoor photo.
Broadmoor
and I'm
photo.
On Instagram, Facebook, and I have a website. So Broadmoor, Broadmoore.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
That's it. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Amy.
Yeah.
All right, and that wraps up episode number 21 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. I want to thank Amy Broadmoor for coming on. Really cool interview with her. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Mike, thanks for your work on this as well. And
Well, I'm just really excited that we're doing this in person again, and I think it'll sound a little bit better and just better flow, and it's definitely nice from the kind of production standpoint to do it in person once again. And I think your back deck is an excellent venue.
Yeah, we can't do it in February, but we can do it in June.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We will talk with you next time.